fall. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Grass make dab in the middle. We are grass make dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to be covering the Oman, the Gulf of Oman attacks on the two oil tankers out there. One was carrying crude and the other one was carrying chemicals. And there's great controversy about what's going on until there was this video that all of a sudden popped up, you know. But anyway, here's one of the latest reports to come in. And then we've got two or three others to follow just to sort of expand, the talk about it a little bit. But here we go with this first latest update.
New developments today in the attack on those two oil tankers in the Middle East. The U.S. Navy releasing this video right here, middle of your screen, which appears to show an Iranian Navy boat removing an unexploded mine from one of the two ships that was attacked yesterday in the Gulf of Oman. President Trump commenting earlier today.
Iran did do it, and you know they did it because you saw the boat. I guess one of the mines didn't explode, and it's probably got essentially Iran written all over it. And you saw the boat at night trying to take the mine off and successfully took the mine off the boat.
Yep.
And that was exposed, and that was their boat, that was them. And they didn't want the evidence left behind. I guess they don't know that we have things that we can detect in the dark.
Fox News' national security correspondent Jennifer Griffin has more from the Pentagon tonight. Jennifer?
Blake, officials say the unexploded Limpet mine removed from the tanker is the same type of mine used to attack four oil tankers last month in the same area. The Secretary of State also blamed Iran for those attacks. U.S. Central Command released this photo showing what it says is the unexploded mine attached to the hull of one of the tankers attacked Thursday. This video, also released by the U.S. military, shows what it claims is proof of Iran's involvement in the attacks. Officials say this Iranian Islamic Revolutionary Guard fast boat were the ones to remove that unexploded mine from the hull. Iran denies it played any role in the attacks. At first, the Iranians put out a press release saying they rescued all 44 of the sailors on the two disabled tankers. U.S. officials now tell us one of the two tanker crews were in fact detained by the Iranians early Thursday morning after first being rescued by another merchant vessel. One of the crew members spoke earlier today on Iranian state television.
I am from Russia. The service was excellent. They have hosted us really well. Everything is fine.
Those 23 sailors detained by Iran have now been held for nearly 2 days against their will. The U.S. Navy says it rescued the other 21 sailors from the second oil tanker guarded by the USS Bainbridge. Those sailors on board the Japanese vessel have been treated and released back to their ship. But in another sign of rising tension, U.S. officials tell me four tugboats contracted to pull the Norwegian-owned tanker were prevented from doing so by Iranian gunboats that have surrounded the stricken tanker.
Coming up next is another report coming out of Fox News. And Greg Jarrett sitting in for Lou Dobbs yesterday. So here we go with this report. There's some overlap on some of these reports, so bear with us.
For more on the White House's reaction to the Iranian attacks, Kevin Cork is live at the White House. Kevin?
Happy birthday to you.
Very nice.
A happy 73rd birthday serenade for President Trump at the White House today. But while his attention in the Rose Garden was trained on domestic health care policy, earlier he took square aim at a familiar international storyline, Iran's destabilizing behavior.
Well, Iran did do it, and you know they did it because you saw the boat. I guess one of the mines didn't explode, and it's probably got essentially Iran written all over it.
What Iran did, the president surmised, was attack oil tankers in the Gulf of Oman this week, evidenced by U.S. Navy footage purportedly showing Iranian vessels attempting to remove unexploded ordnance from a tanker.
That was them, and they didn't want the evidence left behind. I guess they don't know that we have things that we can detect in the dark that work very well.
The incident comes a month after four oil tankers were damaged in attacks that the Trump administration blamed on Iran. Proof, said the president today, of a faltering and increasingly desperate regime.
We had 14 different sites of conflict. They were in charge of every single place, and they really are. They're a nation of terror. And, President, you would right now be in a major war with North Korea.
Still, a war of another kind. A trade war with China continues to worry investors across the globe. And with the G20 meetings in Japan set for later this month, the president today showed little interest in changing course to make a deal with Beijing.
It doesn't matter if he shows up good, if he doesn't. In the meantime, we're taking in billions of dollars a month, Brian, from China. Well, we're going to see. Eventually, they're going to make a deal because they're going to have to.
Greg, the president also said today there is absolutely no way he's going to fire senior counselor to the president, Kellyanne Conway. Of course, you may have heard that a government watchdog group said she should lose her job because of repeated violations of the Hatch Act. That, of course, limits what federal employees can and can't do with respect to political activities. The president said the Office of Special Counsel was simply trying to restrict her right to free speech. Greg?
Kevin Cork of the White House. Kevin, thanks very much. Well, the uproar continues over the president's comments about, you know, hypothetically accepting opposition research from foreign officials. President Trump saying, of course, he would report bad information to law enforcement agencies, far more than the radical Dems did in 2016. Fox chief intelligence correspondent Catherine Herridge joins us tonight with the latest. Catherine.
If you don't look at it, you're not going to know if it's bad.
In a phone interview with Fox, the president clarified his position on whether he would accept information from a foreign government about his political opponents.
If I don't listen, you're not going to know. If I thought anything was incorrect or badly stated, I'd report it to the Attorney General, the FBI. I'd report it to law enforcement. Absolutely.
That appears to be a firmer position than the ABC News interview.
If I thought there was something wrong, I'd go maybe to the FBI.
In a new clip from the interview, the president disputed claims he told former White House counsel Don McGahn to get rid of special counsel Robert Mueller.
I never suggested firing Mueller.
That's
do
not what
I
he
think.
Says.
Excuse, I don't care what he says. It doesn't matter. That was to show everyone what a good counsel he was.
The Mueller report lays out the episode, citing interview notes with the former White House counsel. Quote, the president asked McGahn, did I say the word fire? McGahn responded, what you said is, call Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein. Tell Rod that Mueller has conflicts and can't be the special counsel. The president responded, I never said that. The president said he merely wanted McGahn to raise the conflicts issue with Rosenstein and leave it to him to decide what to do.
Coming up next is Mika Brzezinski interviewing Senator Mayor de Blasio. And they start bringing up this stuff that when he was interviewed, President Trump recently, George Stephanopoulos. They were talking about what, well, Mr. President, if you got a call from someone that had some information, what would you do? Well, they've taken this with innuendo and all kinds of different, very subjective analysis, and they've injected all kinds of ideas into it. You'll not only hear de Blasio inject all kinds of things that Trump didn't say, he's just surmising all this. You'll hear Mika Brzezinski also just inject all kinds of crap and innuendo and made up ideas that, and putting words in the president's mouth. But here we go with this right now.
Joining us now, Democratic presidential candidate, Mayor Bill de Blasio of New York City. Great to have you back on the show.
Thank you, Mika.
Are you getting ready for, you're going to be on the big stage?
Yes, indeed.
You made the stage. That's good.
That's where you begin.
Okay, but then now how do you break out? There's so many candidates. What's the strategy? You're tough on Trump. You have no problem with that.
Yeah, and look, I've been real blunt about Trump. I call him Con Don because every New Yorker knows this guy is a con man. He baits and switches. He tries to distract people. And what he, you know, the way to deal with Donald Trump is very, very aggressively. I think too many times Democrats have been aghast at the things the president says and does, and have to remember we have to confront him. People need to see. And I'll give you an example from New York City. When he put his executive order in place on immigration, he threatened the security funding of New York City, the security funding that protects the city that is the number one terrorism target in America. I said at that time, we are not changing our policies
right.
towards immigrants. We took him to court. We beat him in court. And the point is, you don't back down in the face of the schoolyard bully, and that's what
right.
Donald Trump is.
So what do you make of what's going on in Washington right now? Because, you know, I don't know where this stands in terms of egregious, since racism has been a part of this presidency, but the president said things the other day that show that he is a threat to this country's national security. He said it himself.
Yeah.
He's exposed America to being bought again, and it appears Republicans still won't budge from being cowardly on this issue, on the issue of standing up to the president, which at this point would be standing up to forces of evil. So where are you on impeachment? Understanding that, of course, obviously the math would add up that his behavior is wrong and there might be something that needs to be done. But you need Republican support. You need public support. Where do you stand on what should be done to deal with the problems this president has poses?
So, Mika, I've said for a long time that I'm concerned that, first of all, Democrats in particular need to start talking about the issues and not just impeachment. They need to focus on the issues of working Americans. I haven't seen enough of that. They need to focus on beating Donald Trump in an election, not just hoping he would magically disappear.
Right.
But what happened the other day changed my mind, because that was treason.
Yeah.
That was treason. What he said was openly treasonous. It was an invitation to hostile foreign governments to find information on American leaders and give it to Donald Trump to help Donald Trump. It was an invitation to talk about art of a deal.
Right.
It was an invitation to make a deal. You get me dirt on my opponents and we'll take care of you. And we've seen no better example than with Russia and Putin, where whatever Putin does, mm-hmm. he gets an affirmation from Donald Trump. And now more and more it looks like in exchange for electoral favors. So I heard that and I said, that's the last straw. They should begin impeachment proceedings. We can no longer accept the notion of a president who openly invites interference in our election. Look, the Mueller report was bad enough, and I mm-hmm. thought there was plenty in there that yeah. would eventually lead to a successful impeachment. But that interview, there's those breakthrough moments in life. That interview said he has learned nothing. He is not making any changes. He is not moderating. He has to be impeached.
And Willie, the Mueller report, you know, there's, I guess, people can find a way to be partisan. There's some Republicans who haven't read it. This was the president's words.
Yes.
We're open for business. I'm exposing this country to threats, to having our elections tampered with. And I don't care about this country more than I care about winning. I mean, this is, he said it himself.
We've come to expect things like that from the president. What's sad and pathetic is Republicans supporting
that
argument to fall in line with him.
That is just propaganda. The MSNBC, it's that morning program with Mika and her husband. And it's just totally way off base. It's not even close. And that's what we got to put up with. Now, we got a Turkish broadcast from a think tank fellow. And he's going to be giving us some insight into the sort of a view from the Middle East and from Doha and so forth. And we're going to get a little bit broader view of this conflict that's arisen from Oman, the Gulf of Oman. So here we go with that.
For more on this, Ali Fatollah Najad joins us from Beirut. He is a visiting fellow at the Brookings Doha Center. Thank you for joining us here on the program. Iran says it will scale back its commitment to the nuclear deal. How much danger is the deal in of completely falling apart?
Well, the deal has been on the brink of collapse after the U.S. withdrew from it. And what we're witnessing over the last few months is that Iran is trying to gain some leverage. It had years ago by stopping some of its commitments under the nuclear deal, so that in the event of a negotiation between Iran and the United States, Iran has some leverage and can get some concessions from the other side.
Mm-hmm. In the wake of these attacks on the two oil tankers in the Gulf of Oman, Is the Gulf and the Strait of Hormuz safe? And what happens now? I mean, can this be considered a terrorist attack or even an act of war?
Well, we do not have any conclusive evidence who has been behind those recent tanker attacks near the Strait of Hormuz. Of course, we have had similar incidents during past few weeks. But what we can say is that those who perpetrated those attacks just recently would want to send a message that they're against any kind of easing of tensions between the United States and Iran. And curiously enough, those attacks happened on the same day when the Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe was traveling to Tehran, meeting with the Iranian leaders and acting as some kind of a mediator between the United States and Iran. So whoever was behind those tanker attacks is against the kind of detente between the United States and Iran.
Mm-hmm. As you said, there's no conclusive evidence that Iran was behind those attacks, but the U.S. seems to be fairly certain that it was Iran, and they've released that video that we've seen, that grainy video. It was apparently taken at night. I mean, what other evidence could they possibly have? And if they don't, I mean, surely some other government must have some sort of intelligence or evidence of who was behind the attacks.
Sure, but I think we have to wait a bit for the next few days to have more conclusive evidence. Of course, it is important that the U.S. government has blamed Iran. But then again, we have, you know, there is some doubt when it comes to the credibility of those claims. It remains the fact that both sides are playing a very dangerous, you know, game of poker. However, I think neither the United States nor Iran as, you know, as entire states are interested in some kind of a large-scale military conflict that would have consequences that no one can calculate. Although there might be elements in both capitals who would want to see some kind of a military conflict. And so we cannot exclude the possibility that also some maybe rogue elements in Iran have been doing this. In order to torpedo any kind of mediation, any kind of, you know, by the Japanese, for example, any kind of easing of tensions between the two sides. But still, I think we have, you know, it's unlikely to, you know, to say that Iran was behind those attacks, because it happened on the same day when, you know, the Japanese foreign minister, as I said earlier, traveled to Tehran to help to ease tensions between the two sides.
Mm-hmm. Do you believe that Iran then is preparing itself for conflict? And if so, what could possibly then ease the tensions between the U.S. and Iran?
Well, I think that the situation is tense and has been tense, but both sides, as I said earlier, are not, interested in a large-scale military confrontation that no one can control. But the problem is that there are also differing interests in various capitals when it comes to the question of war and peace. There are elements, as I said, in Iran who, see their interests safeguarded when there is, the continuation of animosity between Iran and the United States. The same is true with elements within the White House, for example, National Security Advisor John Bolton. So what we need now is, to remain calm and to seek some kind of dialogue, although in this kind of situation this seems to be very difficult and for some even unrealistic, but I think the only way forward would be some kind of regional dialogue from happening on one side, between Iran and the other side of the Gulf, and on the other side some kind of dialogue happening between the United States and Iran.
All right, Ali Fatholla Najjar joining us from Beirut, thank you for your time.
Here's another, a little fleshing out of this limpet mine thing by Matt Bracken. And he was actually, he's had experience out in the field on real operations with these limpet mines and so forth. So he knows what he's talking about. Here's the interview that he had on Alex Jones' show. This is excellent. Listen a second.
Nobody is going to just cruise up to a limpet mine on the side of a ship and yank it off unless it's their mine. All limpet mines, all, underline, all, have multiple anti-removal, anti-disturbance devices. They can be as simple as little spring-loaded plunger on the bottom. Once it's put onto the ship with magnets or with a fast epoxy, depending on, you know, the target, once it's put on the ship and it's, you know, the pins are pulled to arm it, anybody tries to take it off, it's going to detonate. So you need an explosive ordnance disposal team that's familiar with that in mind to just come up and remove it that quick. If it was anybody else's mine, you'd be seeing like one guy in a Boston Whaler in a giant suit, an expendable guy, while everybody else is 500 yards away. Another point, so whoever is taking it off, it's the same guys that put it on.
You know, one of the biggest rules of talk radio is you got to be decisive. You got to be authoritative. And you know what? We are authoritative. We love freedom. We love America. We love capitalism. We love Christianity. We love free market. We love mama. We love people that don't back down. That said, sometimes we run into a situation where I don't know what's going on. And the Iranians, bigger than Dallas in April and in May and in this month, said if you put sanctions on the Revolutionary Guard, that's the government, that's the mullahs, that's the Shiite military that took over in 79, we will blow up ships in the Strait of Hormuz. Then it happens and they go, oh, we didn't do it. And then Ron Paul, who I respect, comes out and says, well, the neocons could have done this, but I don't think Ron Paul, God bless him, has as good a memory as he used to, because Cy Hirsch says Dick Cheney proposed it in the secret documents he saw. But let's just not believe Cy Hirsch, even though I found him to be pretty accurate. A major neocon think tank, I'm going to show you this for your TV viewer here in a moment, document cam shot, please, said a few years ago, we need a big dramatic event like the sinking of some ships out there. We might, you know, have to stage it to get that done. Now, these think tanks, people listen to them. Old Dick Cheney said we ought to just release bioweapons and wipe the Muslims out. You know, even though we've got Muslim calls to prayer taking place in New York, I'm about to show you, and I just still can't. I have a little problem releasing a race-specific Arab weapon. I get they want to conquer me, but I just don't think Jesus would like it too much if we kill them all. But, you know, I think the world's kind of going in that direction. So here's the bottom line. I have never seen a case like this where I can't get a fix on it. I respect Ron Paul. I respect Mac Bracken, who was a Navy SEAL and served the Middle East and, you know, knows a lot about this stuff. We have a guy I really respect, Joel Skousen, who's totally dialed in, also been in the military around the world. He's coming on today. But Matt's just popping in this segment the next. But since I mentioned it, here's just some of the stories. Trump rejects Iran's denials that an attack tanker cites video released by Central Command. It's a Washington Post. By the way, no one I know is buying this, which is kind of scary because sometimes governments really do attack us. Sometimes there's real stuff, you know. They always say, I'm the guy that says everything's fake. That's not what happens. I just look at both sides. They'll take the clip out where I war game it and say, oh, look, Jones said. U.S. releases video that it says shows Iran's involvement in oil tanker attacks, and it shows one of the supposed mines that didn't detonate, the one that did, and then it shows, you know, the boat coming up to get it off. Was that Iranians covering up? But why would you even do that, that it was Iranian-made? You think they'd be smart enough to use some foreign-made mine if they were going to do this? I mean, again, this is not decisive in my view. that footage we see. And I told Bracken, I'm not the Navy SEAL, I said, I don't think submarines were used. I think a boat pulled up to the side. We continue. Tanker sinks after an attack in Gulf. 44 crews picked up by Iran. Iran accuses U.S. of lying about suspicious attack on oil tankers. U.S. says video shows Iran removing mine from stricken tanker. Did the Israelis do it? Did the Saudis do it? Did another faction inside Iran do it? Or did the Iranian government look at North Korea firing missiles and doing all this? And they got a peace deal and Trump to back off on some sanctions, not all of them. And maybe they're thinking we're going to go that route where either way we get a war, looks like Washington starts it, or they back off and we think they will. All I know is John Kerry's right in the middle of it advising all this with Obama and Hillary. And that makes me side with Trump and the Pentagon, because I'll side with them over the Clintons and over Kerry, who are siding with Iran. And that's why at a gut level, I'm backing the president. Whatever happens, this could be staged, it couldn't be staged. It doesn't matter. We've had leftists involved, and I mean, it does matter, but I'm saying in the final equation, you have leftist globalists double dealing and working with Hezbollah as a proxy army all over the world for child trafficking, drug trafficking, you name it. And they're involved in this, and I smell their fingerprints. So when you say maybe neocons did it, the neocons are against Trump. You all know how they embarrassed Jimmy Carter. They had a deal to not release the hostages till Reagan got in because they got tow missiles and a couple $1 billion. That's declassified. Well, are the same groups that did that to Jimmy Carter doing it to Trump now? Matt Bracken, let's get your expert analysis on this.
Yeah, I've been following this real close today and real close. And I have some input other than, you know, we can go around the false flag political possibilities. That rabbit hole could occupy the whole time. But just talking about the mines. And the helicopter video, people need to realize a few things. Some remarks I'm saying is that's the best video they could get. You know, you have to understand the helicopter is getting the grainy video of them removing the mine is out of visual and audio range of the boat.
That's super zoom camera. People are like, oh, my megapixel camera does better than that. If they got close to the boat, the Iranians would shoot at them. They always do.
Or just, you know, do something like act innocent. Man overboard, we're helping some guy out of the water. You know, they'd have a cover already because they came up as like, oh, we're just trying to help. But the boat itself is the ID. The boat is a you know, one of a class produced in Iran, not made anywhere else, unique to Iran. So that's an Iranian signature right there. And the mine itself, the Russians aren't going to hand these mines out. The Iranians had to make it. And remember, when we were fighting in Iraq, the Iranians designed and built land mines. They're incorrectly called IEDs. There's nothing improvised about them. They factory-made penetrators, very sophisticated, you know, shaped, charged.
You'll have the floor when we come back. You'll have the floor for one segment. I appreciate you coming on. You did a great job yesterday. And I hear what you're saying, because I've watched TV. I've seen the Iranian boats. I've seen their dress. It is an Iranian boat. It looks like Iranians. Unless it's that Dick Cheney plan to copy one, have Navy SEALs do it. But I don't think, again, we would get the Trump would do this, or we would get Navy SEALs to do it. I just don't see a false flag this risky being carried out in open water. We'll see with Matt Bracken straight ahead. All right, Matt Bracken, former Navy SEAL, best-selling author, great political brain. He's giving his perspective. We'll have Joel Skousen, who's an amazing geopolitical analyst, probably one of the best out there. Next segment, I haven't checked to see his view. He's the editor of World Affairs Brief. We'll find out in a few minutes. But we could talk all day about who really did this. Trump says he thinks it's Iran. And, you know, Trump doesn't want war in Syria, doesn't want it in Afghanistan. He wants to have peace. But he's getting a lot more info than we're getting, and I tend to trust the president. I think he has a lot of problems. I have a lot of problems. We all see through rose-colored darklies. But the fact that he says that he's got this intel and other intel from CENTCOM, they think it's the Iranians. Well, if they did do it, let's just say they did, my God, what are they thinking, Matt Bracken, and where does this go, and what does the U.S. do?
Well, I can tell you one thing for sure. Nobody is going to just cruise up to a limpet mine on the side of a ship and yank it off unless it's their mine. All limpet mines, all, have multiple anti-removal, anti-disturbance devices. They can be as simple as little spring-loaded plunger on the bottom. Once it's put onto the ship with magnets or with a fast epoxy, depending on, you know, the target, once it's put on the ship and it's, you know, the pins are pulled to arm it. Anybody tries to take it off, it's going to detonate. So you need an explosive ordnance disposal team that's familiar with that in mind to just come up and remove it that quick. If it was anybody else's mine, you'd be seeing like one guy in a Boston Whaler in a giant suit, an expendable guy, while everybody else is 500 yards away. Another point, so whoever is taking it off, it's the same guys that put it on, or the same, you know, EOD.
Well, exactly. I'm not an explosive expert like you are. You know, all Navy SEALs obviously are experts in that. I know that's one of your specialties. But, yeah, they just go right up and are grabbing this thing off like they know all about it. They shouldn't be scared to death. But obviously they knew the code. They knew the switches. I mean, let's get into the different ways these mines are set and designed to not be deactivated.
They disarmed it. They knew how to disarm it because they built it. This wasn't like a Russian off-the-shelf thing. Remember, in Iraq, they built these anti-tank weapons that could blow holes right through an Abrams. They were very sophisticated, designed in Iran. Remember, the Iranians and Indians invented chess. They're not dumb, okay? They may be crazy mullahs, but they're smart people. Now, another important element of this is its placement above the waterline. If it was a limpet mine below the waterline to be more stealthy, then it would just cause pollution. They wanted the fire. The goal of these mines is the fire. And you can see it looks like they got one ship to ignite, but the other one didn't.
They wanted to sink the ships. The goal was to sink the ships.
And for television audience, there's nothing like a big pyre of, you know, yellow and red flame and smoke going for miles. That's way more dramatic than polluting the Persian Gulf, which it's also doing.
So their message to Trump is, capitulate or we're going to run a proxy war. And the next question is, John Kerry has been over there openly advising against U.S. policy. If that isn't treason, what is?
Well, sure, but he went to Paris and met with the communists during that war. So it's nothing new for him. But here, because remember, it's like James Comey. He has a higher loyalty. It's not to the United States. It's to globalism/communism. But another factor about this type of a mine, it requires a secondary charge. It's very sophisticated. If you just put a hole in a fuel tank on the land or that doesn't mean it's going to fireball like Hollywood. You need to have one breaching charge so that the fuel is coming out through the air. That's critical. You know, lots of fumes to ignite. Then a secondary charge, thermite, probably, that burns at thousands of degrees for, you know, 10 straight minutes. That's what's required to get that thing burning. So their mines didn't work in each case, and they were left with the moment when, you know, they pull back.
Because their signature weapon would be attached to the ship.
Right. So somebody took the decision, let's go up there like we're just trying to help and to get that damn thing as fast as we can. And meanwhile, the American helicopter is out of sight. Something I know about from the tanker war era. But people don't realize, we've all seen the Apache gunship video of the 30-millimeter cannons hitting insurgents in Afghanistan and Iraq. Those guys don't even know there's a helicopter in the sky. Those 30 millimeters reach
sure,
out.
They're shooting at them at like a mile and a half.
Or further. Because of the slant angle, down slant angle. So the guys being filmed don't even know they're being filmed at all. They could have, you know, fired around in the water around them or something, but obviously that would require.
Man, I got to tell you, your point about them driving right up in the ocean, just grabbing a mine right off the side of that ship, then they may spend 5 seconds messing with it. That means that they knew exactly what to do, because you're right. Anybody, Jane's Weapons Quarterly admits all mines have anti-removal procedures because they don't want people fishing them off the side who don't know what they're doing. So that
especially
means
this type, especially a limpet mine. Especially every limpet.
So did it have levers, or did it have like a touch keypad, or whoa.
Well, my knowledge is pretty old, but they're generally mechanical because you need to, or sometimes they're just made so it can't be removed. You know, period. Nobody. You know, you've got to evacuate the ship. There is no safe removal method. But usually, you're going to insert something into a hole or put something in one.
So you're
hole.
You're saying they had to have a key. He probably had a key.
And a sequence.
You watch the video. He goes up. Looks like he's got a key. A wrench, and then boom, they take it off.
Right. They need to know, and like if you turn it right and in a sequence, you put this one in this hole, put this one in, turn clockwise three turns, then remove that one. If you don't do that exactly, boom, it goes off. So they're not going to just cruise up to it unless it's their mine. That's their boat.
So let's finish up with this. Why would the Iranians be this crazy? Because they saw what North Korea's done, and they think brinksmanship pays off.
I think that they're going to try to instigate us into something like the 1988 Operation Praying Mantis, where we go and really give their military a big attack. That gets world sympathy on their side. At the same time, they're hoping to put pressure on Angela Merkel and the Europeans, et cetera, to force us back to negotiate, because we're energy independent. But Europe has a jugular vein going through the Strait of
Hormuz. Same with Japan.
And same with Japan. So that means instead of just the USA calling the shots, that means that the EU and Japan and Korea are going to be calling
the
shots.
And that means the sanctions are really killing them.
The sanctions are killing them, and they're willing to take desperate steps. And if it does go to Straits of Hormuz war, a big difference from 1988 is now they have thousands of these Chinese silkworm missiles and better, hypersonic sea-skimming missiles. We really have...
That'll take all our ships out.
Well, and nothing will go through the Straits of Hormuz for weeks or months, unless we do a land invasion, because these are mobile-launched missiles hiding in thousands of caves, moving all over the place. The only way to open the Straits of Hormuz would be to put Marines and U.S. Army on the ground in Iran, and I think nobody wants to do that, and the Iranians are fully aware we're not up for that.
Or you nuke the leadership, which I'm not calling for, but you know that's in the cards. I guarantee.
Remember, they invented chess. The last time we checkmated them in 1988, they had no more pieces. This time they're playing chess. They've got a whole slew of queens and rooks ready to pull out. They think.
No, I agree. I'm blind in this. I really respect our next guest. We'll see what Joel Skousen, who's a Marine Corps aviator and patriot and all dialed in, we'll see what he has to say about this. Matt Bracken, enemiesfarandomestic.com. Thank you.
Coming up next is that there was a great, great big protest in Hong Kong. The government there, headed up by Carrie Lam, she's Hong Kong's chief executive, they put forward an extradition bill. And this extradition bill would have wide implications on an administrative basis, with no judiciary involved in this, to extradite anyone from Hong Kong to several countries of which they did not have a existing extradition treaty with. So this was going to place into the hands a very, very powerful weapon that could be placed against anyone, that could be used against anyone. And there were a million people a week ago last Sunday in the streets of Hong Kong. And here's what they did. Carrie Lam is explaining and delivering a pronouncement of suspending this. But listen carefully. It's not really a suspension. It's only a temporary suspension, because we're going to take some input and this and that, and we're going to consider it in the future, and there's no deadline. So listen to what Carrie Lam has to say.
I now announce that the government has decided to suspend the legislative amendment exercise, restart our communication with all sectors of society, do more explanation work, and listen to different views of society. I want to stress that the government is adopting an open mind to heed comprehensively different views in society towards the bill. The Secretary for Security will send a letter to the Legislative Council President to withdraw the notice of resumption of a second reading debate on the bill. In other words, the Council will halt its work in relation to the bill until our work in communication, explanation, and listening to opinions is completed. We have no intention to set a deadline for this work, and promise to report to and consult members of the Legislative Council panel on security before we decide on the next step forward.
Coming up next is David Icke interviewed on the dangers of these 5G. This is a new, cell phone network that's being set up, and doesn't have since it's a higher frequency, it can't penetrate solid objects, so they'll have to have a lot more transmitter boxes scattered all over. And listen to this, how dangerous this can be.
it's important to understand what the 5G is doing and what they say it's doing. We're told on the IEEE beamforming document that this technology cooked your eyes like eggs in World War II.
We live in a world now where everything has to be black and white. You're for us or you're against us. You're good or you're bad. You're black or you're white. 5G is a weapon. It's used by the military. They drive up in these technology when they want to scatter a cloud, and they put out these frequencies in a much higher power than 5G will be initially with us, but the same frequency. And people scatter because they get the feeling their skin is on fire. Because the human body, including the skin, is an antenna. It interacts with frequencies, and it receives and transmits information. At the cutting edge of understanding of DNA, scientists know that DNA is a receiver-transmitter of information. And we are electromagnetic, electrical organisms, transmitters and receivers of information. When our electromagnetic fields are in balance and harmony, we have health. We have psychological health, and we have physical health. The reason that this technological society is causing so much psychological and physical disease is because these frequencies, technologically driven, and live in this Wi-Fi world now and all the phone masts and all the rest of it, these technologically generated frequencies are scrambling the balance of the human electromagnetic communication systems. And if you scramble them, you create a state of disharmony, dis-ease, which plays through to physical and mental, emotional, psychological dis-ease. And there's another point to this. The brain processes information electrically. It communicates with the cellular structure electrically. And it operates within a certain band of frequency. If you can broadcast frequencies carrying information and perceptions within the frequency that the brain decodes information, the brain will decode those frequencies and will have those perceptions. You can externally, even without connection to AI, although that's the piece de resistance, if you like, that's the kind of holy grail, but even before that, you can influence people's perceptions externally by broadcasting these frequencies that we interact with, because we are antenna. Now, some decades ago, there was a guy who worked out the frequencies of different emotional states. This is long ago. I mean, it's very, very sophisticated now. So, every thought, every emotional response is a frequency. It generates a frequency, and it is of itself a frequency. Hate is a frequency, and it's different to love. You know, when you are in a room and there's lots of aggression and conflict and hatred, you feel it. What do people say? Oh God, you can cut the atmosphere with a knife in there. That is because the frequencies of hate and conflict have been so generated, they have changed the electromagnetic field of the room.
Okay, so 5G is going to be weaponized against us potentially.
Yeah, but the point being that they worked out the frequencies of various emotions, including rage, and basically they can play across a community these frequencies without anyone knowing, and it starts to have an effect. And it starts to build rage, it starts to build anger, and people might not realize why they're feeling it, but they start to feel it. And then what they do is they trigger that with an event, maybe some guy is attacked by the police or something, or somebody's arrested for something they didn't commit, and now there's the trigger. The blue touch paper has been lit of this manufactured frequency-driven rage, and you have mass riots and what have you, and people do things that they wouldn't normally do. And you can make people depressed. You know, the American military, they've admitted this. They have technology that fires frequencies at the enemy that that basically breaks the enemy's spirit so they give up and put their weapons down. This is the technology we're dealing with. Now you take that into account and then you think of 5G. First of all, 5G doesn't travel well because of the nature of its frequency. So instead of big towers, as we have now, broadcasting these frequencies long distances, it won't do that. And it doesn't go through solid objects, what we call solid objects, very well either. So to overcome that, there are going to be boxes broadcasting 5G, this weapon, down every street, all over the world. You're talking phenomenal numbers of these boxes broadcasting, like on the lamp standard outside your children's bedroom and stuff, broadcasting this stuff. There's no way you'll be able to go where you won't be in a field of 5G. And another interesting thing, I don't know whether you've noticed this, but the story broke first of all in Sheffield when the council started cutting down literally thousands and thousands and thousands of mature trees in urban streets. And there were big protests about it. You know, Sheffield claimed to be a green city, but all these mature trees were coming down, thousands of them. Now, the worst nightmare, I'm not saying cause and effect, but I'm saying think on it, the worst nightmare of 5G in a street is mature trees, because it can't get through them. They don't want urban trees for 5G, because it won't go through solid objects very well at all, and it doesn't travel far. So we're going to have this explosion of 5G transmitters, and then there's going to be like 20,000 satellites up there beaming 5G at the Earth.
We're sort of experimental guinea pigs. In fact, there's a man that wrote a book called Guinea Pigs talking about this stuff. Coming up next is a report in X-22, Dave, and he's got some very important things to say about Kellyanne Conway's recently brush with criticism. Here we go now.
Hi, and welcome. You're listening to the X-22 Report. My name is Dave, and this is episode 1893B, and today's date is June 15th, 2019, and the title of the episode is, Boom, Did You Catch What Happened? There Are No Coincidences. Now, before I get started, I wanted to talk about VPNs. The Department of Homeland Security has officially come out and said foreign-based VPNs can pose a security risk to the United States government. The reasons given were based on the fact that even though foreign VPNs can elude U.S. and U.K. law, the worry is that foreign governments such as China and Russia could strong-arm a local VPN company to hand over its user data with no issue at all. This move would expose tons of United States citizens' personal data and browsing history, creating a huge national risk. This is why when using a VPN, it's good to use a company such as Virtual Shield to take advantage of its no-log policy. Virtual Shield is located in the United States, which respects user data laws but does not log its users' browser's history. This is a key factor in why I use Virtual Shield VPN, because I know that my browsing history is not kept or logged on their servers. This month, Virtual Shield is offering a Father's Day celebration special of 20% off all VPN plans and all premium add-ons, including Protection Plus, residential access, monthly maintenance, phone support, and VIP performance plans for as low as $3 per month. Sign up for a free 30-day trial by clicking the link below. Let's get into the economic collapse, political and geopolitical news. Now, the Patriots and their plan to bring down the deep state, to drain the swamp, it is working perfectly. And I realized something when I was passing by a television which was broadcasting CNN. And I was realizing exactly what the Patriots actually did. And it just hit me out of the blue. And it's unbelievable how their entire plan, which they've been planning for a very long time, how it is all completely planned out perfectly to get certain results. And there are no coincidences. And yes, we talked about how Trump was out there and he was pushing the plan to get the politicians, the mainstream media, to talk about how getting information from a foreign government is absolutely illegal. But he went, not just him, but the Patriots went one step further. And it was brilliant on their part, and we're going to be talking about that in just a minute. But first, I wanted to talk about how the deep state, how they're trying to create chaos and make it seem like the administration, Trump's administration, well, they're doing illegal things, and they're continually doing this. And this is with Kellyanne Conway, where we had the U.S. Office of Special Counsel said in a report that Kellyanne Conway has repeatedly violated the Hatch Act and recommended her removal from federal service. So what is the Hatch Act? What does it do? Well, it bars federal employees from engaging in political activity. Now, Trump already, he came out and said, I'm not going to fire her. I think she's a terrific person. She's a tremendous spokesperson. He said, it looks to me like they're trying to take away her right of free speech. Now, in May of 2019, during a media interview, when asked about the Hatch Act, Kellyanne Conway said, if you're trying to silence me through the Hatch Act, it's not going to work. Let me know when the jail sentence starts. Now, what's very interesting, we know that former FBI Director Andrew McCabe, he violated the Hatch Act without fear of reprisal. And we're going to be talking about others who also violated the Hatch Act, and nothing really happened to them. So, who is bringing these charges? That's the question. Who is pushing this? Henry Koehner. And the question is, who is Henry Koehner? Henry Koehner is a deep state fixer who was good friends with late Senator John McCain and a staunch anti-Trump neoconservative lawmaker. Koehner called Kellyanne Conway's behavior unprecedented despite the numerous Hatch Act violations against other members of previous presidential administrations, including the Obama administration, whose officials, Julian Castro and Kathleen Sebelius, both escaped firing for their Hatch Act controversies. The Office of Special Counsel even confirmed that Sebelius violated the Hatch Act by pushing for Obama's 2012 presidential campaign at North Carolina event. But guess what? She continued, and she was never fired. So Henry Koehner is now coming under scrutiny from his past. And the conservative Treehouse reported on Koehner's role as a fixer in 2018. Yesterday, it was revealed that Henry Koehner, as a former McCain senior staff official, was part of a bipartisan D.C. team who constructed the IRS weaponization program to target the Tea Party. That's bad enough. However, a little more digging. You're not going to believe this. The same guy who was attached to the prior investigations is now in charge of all D.C. corruption and whistleblowing cases, including the current FBI and Department of Justice corruption. Henry Koehner is special counsel in charge of all whistleblowing, witnesses, and cases of government corruption. Henry Koehner controls the events as the lead official, the special counsel in charge of the Office of Special Counsel, and he is in the position to manipulate, control any investigative outcome. Starting to put the pieces together here, and we're starting to paint this picture of what they're trying to do here, who controls what, and it always comes back to the same players of the deep state. And they're trying to create chaos to show that Trump's administration, they're doing things illegally. But once again, it's going to fail. Now, very interestingly, with Julian Assange, we know the UK officials, they signed off on having the extradition move forward. And we understand that the court would be looking at this, which they already did. And it looks like they have set the full hearing sometime after February 24th of 2020. Now, this actually fits into the plan of the Patriots, because I do believe when all this information comes out, they're going to need Julian Assange back here in this country, and I do believe it's going to be in the year of 2020, and I think this is when they're going to extradite him back to the United States, because there are going to be other things happening before we get to the investigations with the emails and things like that. So I do believe the Patriots have planned this perfectly.
You've got these moles still in there, according to X-22. And Trump has just not been able to disengage some of these people. So we've got this Koehner fella in there, Henry Koehner. We've got them attacking Kellyanne Conway you know, a Hatch Act, of which they're more guilty of than anyone else probably. And then we do have some optimism expressed by X-22 about Julian Assange. He's of the opinion that they're bringing him here to testify, you know, about how he received some of these Democratic, party emails that were lifted. And Bill Binney has said years ago, a long time ago, that there had to be someone in the office of the Democratic National Party Committee to download directly off of the server. Because the rate of download far exceeded that of which you could get it over the internet. So it had to be someone in the office to download it. And we think Seth Rich was that person. And Julian Assange might possibly end up in the United States under these so-called charges, but end up providing a really insightful, damning testimony of how that information was received. And if it was received like Bill Binney and others, Bill Binney's a top technical engineer with the NSA for years. And so he says that it had to be someone sitting in the office, perhaps like Seth Rich, and downloaded it directly off of one of the servers there in the office to get the amount of information that was downloaded at the speed and so forth. But you could do it with a thumb drive, but you just couldn't do it with just anything out there. So that's what Bill Binney was saying could have been, or, you know, it had to be something along that lines. We want to thank everyone out there for listening to us, and we're trying to bring you some insight. This latest thing in this Gulf of Oman attacks, different people have different views. You could say Skolson says, you know, interviewed earlier this week, was saying that Iran is not as bad as they really are. And so he's laying off a lot of these false flag operations on the CIA. And I must agree, you know, with him on that up to a point. But what we're missing on Iran is that when the mullahs took over, when Khomeini came in and they ousted the Shah, ran him out of Iran, the Shah was a front man for the oil companies. And so that's why he was there and stayed in power for so long. He had his own secret police, which were bad news. And so this is what, you know, harmed the actual person. Now who comes in are the mullahs under the guise of being these holy men. And they're not only taking the existing foundations, but setting up new ones. And these new foundations have gotten a monopoly on business and with tax-free, no taxes paid. So those foundations today in Iran are beginning to take over and just, you know, dominate maybe 35 to 40% of the business. And so it's pushing other people out that want to do things in Iran and that don't have the resources and so forth. And so this is what we're seeing in Iran is they're developing, not only do they have they're lacking potable water at times. So they're running out of good potable fresh water. These are some of the problems too, see, they're running into in Iran. So they're not just one problem, but there's several problems. And if they don't watch it, they might have a major, you could say, revolution on their hands. And maybe we're playing that, in that direction. Maybe we're playing this whole thing with these sanctions and so forth to create unrest for regime change, but an internal one. And it could possibly happen, but the Revolutionary Guard is a very powerful organization, and they would have to possibly go along with some internal rumblings or takeovers outside of the mullah system. But anyway, thank you for listening. TheSecretTruth.com every Saturday, 7 to 9. Thank you, and good night.